I'm Maria Dudzak, and periodically we like to have folks from the fire department come in and talk about fire safety, and now focusing a bit on winter fire safety. Joining us this morning, we have Fire Marshal Chris Grooms. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
Doing well. Thanks so much for being here, and I know this can be a time of year where you need to be maybe a little bit safer with your matches and, and flames.
Yes, ma'am. I have a list of things I'd like to cover quickly and then go over some of those more in depth. And so to start off with, we do use heating elements during the wintertime, and they can be your fireplace, different types of electrical appliances, and you need to keep anything that will burn at least 3 feet away from those. So that means clothing, bedding, newspapers or anything to that effect. So that it doesn't catch on fire by radiant heat. And then you also need to have a kid-free zone so that little kids can't get in there and burn themselves in some manner.
When you say a kid-free zone, you're meaning don't let the kids pass this certain line sort of thing?
You could do that, or you could put up kid gates, depending on the age of the children that are involved. A lot of people put a gate around their fireplace to keep the children away. That works really well. Don't use your cooking oven or range top as a heat source. You need to have something else. Those are not made for that purpose. And although they do give off heat, they have different appliances for that purpose. And so those are a potential fire hazard if you keep using them that way. If you're using a portable heater and you want to leave the room, turn it off. You don't know what will happen while you're gone. Most of the portable heaters nowadays have a tip switch that will turn the unit off as soon as it's tipped over. But if you have an older one, it might not do that. Another thing is a lot of people like to use candles this time of year. And if you're using a candle and you're in the room, that's great. However, a lot of people get up and move to a different room or do something else, and it's animals can knock them over, or you know, who knows what can happen. But I've been to several fires that were started by candles, and we don't want that. So if you have a candle burning and you want to go to sleep, put the candle out also. That can be very dangerous to your health. Let's see. Use the right kind of fuel. If you have a diesel burning appliance, use diesel fuel instead of gasoline or whatever.
Does that commonly happen, that people use incorrect fuel?
I have seen it happen. Whether by mistake or by intent, I'm not sure, but it can be disastrous. Another is to have a smoke alarm in your house. It's recommended that you have one per floor, even including basements, and then one in each bedroom so that it alerts you to the fact that there's a fire.
Should it be in your bedroom or right
yes.
outside it?
One outside your bedroom in the hallway, and then one in each sleeping room.
Okay.
So that there's... it will wake you up. I've been to, unfortunately, a few fatalities that they didn't have smoke alarms in their bedroom.
And also make sure they're working.
Yes, you need to change the batteries occasionally. Obviously, it's recommended to do that when you change your clocks in the fall and in the spring. Make sure you have fresh batteries so you know that it's working. And another option is to test those on a regular basis, and most people don't do that. I did find one smoke alarm when I first arrived here in town 3.5 years ago. A person brought that smoke alarm in, and it was 30 years old. And it was actually smoking inside the alarm and setting itself off. Mm-hmm. Smoke alarms are nowadays usually manufactured for a 10-year useful life. So if you hear the battery chirping, you might want to take it down and look on the back. It gives the manufacturer's date. And if it's over 10 years, it's time to replace. Another type of alarm is carbon monoxide. Carbon monoxide is created by burning fuels such as wood or oil, propane, all of those. They produce that type of gas. It's odorless. It's you can't see it, and that's why a carbon monoxide detector is helpful. We'll show you if there's a hazard or not. And if it starts going off, you need to get out of the house. Call the fire department. We'll bring in a test piece of equipment and verify if there really is a problem. Several people have fuel appliances that the exhaust leaks and there's a problem. And that can be deadly. And you wouldn't even know. Another thing is to clean your chimneys on a regular basis. We do have equipment you can check out from the fire department to clean your chimney, and most people don't keep those at home, but we have them you can check out for free.
How often should you clean your chimney?
It depends on
how much you use it.
Yeah, how much you use it, obviously. It depends on also the type of wood you use. Some people will use green wood, and that's full of moisture. It's full of wet sap, and that tends to put a lot of chemicals into the chimney, which then settle on the sides of the chimney, and that's prime for having a chimney fire. So the creosote tends to gather, and if it gets going, it sounds like a freight train in your house.
Mm. Is it something you should kind of check annually? Or
annually is great. The best time for me to suggest would be in the summertime when it's warm and the roof is dry and you can work on it without hazard. Some people wait till it's fall and when they want to use their wood stove again.
And I believe now there actually are some chimney cleaning services in town that for a while there weren't, and I believe I have seen ads for those as well. So, but again, you mentioned the fire department has equipment that people can borrow.
Yes. Yes, and if you don't feel comfortable being on your roof, have a friend do it that is, or hire a service. Don't be on the roof if you're not comfortable with that. Another thing is that most of us have neighbors that are elderly. Go check on your neighbors. Help them out. Test their smoke alarms. Change their batteries. Help them to understand what it's fire safety is about. Most of us appreciate having a person come visit us and maybe not telling us how to do it, but helping us understand the importance of those things. So some specific things, electric space heaters are common nowadays. We want you to make sure that they're UL listed, first of all. It's a little sticker either on the back or underneath side. It tells you that it's been tested for proper use. And unfortunately, we get equipment that comes in from other countries that is sold either on the Internet or locally that's not UL listed. And the potential for fire is pretty strong there. So again, use the 3-foot rule. Keep everything away, clothing, bedding, and so on. And plug your heater directly into an outlet. Don't use an extension cord. Don't use a power strip. Plug it directly into the wall. And don't overload your circuit. There's potential to cause a fire by having too many things plugged in. So another area is furnace heating. If you have a furnace or a boiler or something like that, make sure that it's professionally inspected once a year. Have them run through it. They know what they're doing. They're certified. They're technicians, and they can spot a problem. I just had my furnace serviced earlier this week, and they found some issues. And so it's best to have someone that really knows what they're doing look at that. So, again, be careful of what you store around your furnace, your boiler. Don't pile things, even though it seems like a good storage area. A lot of people look at a flat surface and think they can put something there. But we need to keep things...
And it's warm in there.
And it's warm. Dries out your wet winter gear or whatever. But you need to keep that away from your furnace. And then if for some reason the furnace stops working or sounds different, be sure you call a technician. Don't try and fix it yourself unless you know what you're doing. You could be causing more problems. Back to the fireplace issue again, and wood-burning stoves. If you use dry seasoned wood, you'll create less creosote in the chimney. You won't need to clean it as often. You won't have the potential, as much potential for a chimney fire. I've seen people use liquid fire starters of some sort, whether that be gasoline or diesel fuel, and you should never start a fire with that. If your wood is dry and you understand how to build a fire, you don't need any kind of liquid. And it's potential that that would cause a vapor explosion out into the room, maybe burn you, burn your house, who knows. But it's not worth that. Fireplaces are only used for burning wood. Don't burn your garbage in your fireplace or in your wood stove. Do that elsewhere or send it out through the regular services. I've also seen a couple of fires started by people putting their ashes in a plastic bucket. It's interesting that we think the fire is totally out, and yet there's hot embers still in there. It melts the bucket, starts the house on fire. Or if you put it in a metal bucket, which is too close to other combustibles, I've seen that as well.
Because it will heat up the metal.
It can.
What should you put them in? What type of a container?
Well, it should be some type of a metal container and set it
on brick or something.
Something, yes, that's not combustible. Some place away from the wall of your house or your garage and let it cool down. That way you know that you're safe. I've seen too many house fires because of that. I spoke to carbon monoxide a few minutes ago. There are a lot of times when the power goes out that people choose an alternative heat source within their house. I've seen people run generators in their house, other types of gas engines, and that produces carbon monoxide. And again, that's extremely dangerous and very deadly. So if you will have a generator, run it outside. If you have a camp stove, don't use that for heat, okay? Anything that burns charcoal, like a barbecue, that type of thing, they don't belong in your house. And you don't want to put yourself in danger because of that. If it seems like the power is going to be out for an extended time, find a friend where their power is not out, or an emergency shelter. Sometimes we're too proud to go to a place like that, but those are there to help us in times of emergency. So it's better to do that than put yourself in a major hazard situation. Another thing to consider, excuse me, is Christmas trees this time of year.
I was going to ask about that.
Yes. Trees like water. And if you bring a fresh tree into the house, you need to cut about a half inch or so off the bottom, put it in a stand with water, and keep the water in there at all times. I've seen comparison videos of trees that have been left dry versus trees that have been watered. And it's amazing the time frame between lighting the fire and the tree being involved in the fire. In a dry tree, it's in seconds. So you don't have much time.
And the other thing that I note is you should make sure it's drinking up the water.
Yes.
Because if it's not, then you haven't cut off enough.
Correct.
In order for
and
it
you may have to do it again, mm-hmm. Which means all your decorations might fall on the floor or whatever. But if you sense that your tree is getting dry, you know, make sure it's got water in it, or if you have to cut some more off, all you have to do is grab one of the branches and pull towards you just lightly. If the needles fall off in your hand, it's too dry. A lot of people complain that they don't like live trees in their house because the needles fall everywhere. But if you kept it watered, it wouldn't do that. So need to check that on a daily basis and make sure that it still has water. And then, again, keep that tree a long ways away, at least 3 feet away from any kind of heat source, a portable heater, fireplace, or so on. Those will tend to dry out the tree as well. Again, you need to use UL-approved Christmas lights. Don't buy the cheapest thing you can find, but buy something that's quality. Make sure that those tags are on there. I've heard of people using candles on Christmas trees.
It was the old-fashioned way.
The old-fashioned way. But I don't think that's a very good idea. And so I try to dissuade people from that one. And then if you're going to be having your Christmas lights on at night or in the evening, turn them off before you go to bed. Or turn them off before you leave the house if you're going out for the evening. You want your house to be there when you get back. So it's you don't know if there's a short in the wire. Generally, we can see if they're working or not working, but if we're not there, we don't have a clue. So
you also mentioned not to overload outlets, and a lot of times people have extra lights and extra things, and something to keep in mind is usually, I believe on the boxes it says, you know, how many you're allowed to string together.
String together. It's interesting they've gone with the LED lights nowadays. The old-style light bulbs produced a lot of heat as well as drew a lot of amperage. And you could only put one or two together. With the new ones, I've seen as many as 50 that you could string together.
And it doesn't produce the heat or
LED
have the...
LED don't produce much heat at all. And it dissipates quickly. So that's new technology that's helped a lot. However, on that same note, by International Fire Code, temporary lights such as Christmas lights are good for 90 days only.
What do you mean by good for?
To be put up for 90 days. Beyond that, they should be taken back down and maybe even replaced the next year.
So that's kind of their life, in a sense? Or dangerous to leave out? Or they just don't want them left out?
Well, people tend to use them for low-level lighting. Don't want to pick on anyone, but some classrooms have them in place of the overhead lights. But they tend to want to use those year-round, and they're not made for that much use.
Okay.
The wiring is lightweight. They can be damaged. I've seen people put them up with staple guns and staple right through the wire. Not a good idea. So if you have Christmas lights up for a short time, that's great. But be sure you take them back down at the end of the season.
Okay.
So that brings up electric cord safety. Electric extension cords are made for temporary use. Again, you come back to the 90-day issue. And if someone is using an extension cord in place of permanent wiring, they're putting themselves at risk. They're not made for extended use. So you can use a power strip, but power strips have to be plugged into an outlet, and you're not supposed to put an extension cord into a power strip. During the inspections, one place I found a total of 5 in series between extension cords and power strips, and it's just an extreme hazard. So Power strips generally have 6 plug-ins. You can overload a circuit very easily if you put 6 space heaters on, just say. They're not made for that, and neither is the wiring in the wall.
And as you mentioned, a space heater should just be directly plugged into the wall as opposed to using a power strip or extension cord.
Yes. And so back to UL again, Underwriters Laboratory. You need to look and make sure when you purchase a cord that it's got a UL sticker or stamp on it, that it's heavy duty enough to carry the load that you're looking for. Most of us will go to a dollar store, which we don't have here necessarily, but and buy the cheapest one we can find and then put a lot of appliances on it. And that'll cause a fire. Look at the cord for damage. Has the cat chewed on it? The dog chewed on it? Is it frayed? One example I have used is people that use a vacuum cleaner, and they plug it in and they work their way across the room, and they don't want to go all the way back to the plug-in to pull the plug out of the wall, so they'll just grab the cord and pull it from 20 feet away. That tends to stretch the covering, sheathing on the wire, pull the wires out of the plug. People do that with extension cords as well.
I was going to say people also vacuum over their... I've accidentally done that, vacuum over your wire, your other cords.
Yes.
Which I better check them and make sure they're safe.
Make sure that that doesn't have any nicks or cuts in it. That's a good thing. If it's frayed or cracked or any way looks like it's worn, it's time to replace it. So the last thing on cords is they're not meant to be run through walls or through doorways or windows or anything such as that. That becomes a permanent wire situation, and you need to talk to an electrician about installing another outlet instead of using temporary wiring. Okay. And last but not least is fire extinguishers. There are different types of fire extinguishers for different purposes. You need to know what that means. We've got A, B, C, and D, and K extinguishers. And I won't explain that all on the radio, but if you have questions about how, which type to buy, which size to buy, where to place it, how to use it, give me a call at the fire station. And if you have a business, once the weather turns a little bit warmer, I can even do a fire extinguisher class with a prop that will help you understand how they work.
And if you have one, say, in your kitchen or something, can you trust, I guess, the little dial that says if it's charged or not, or do you need to replace them after X number of years, or how would you know if it's still good?
Well, most of them have a manufacture date on the label, and you can look at that. If it's over 10 years old, you probably should replace it. For commercial use, however, it has to be recertified on an annual basis. And so every year they have to be taken in springtime in Ketchikan when all the seasonal businesses start up again. The folks that work on fire extinguishers are extremely busy because everybody wants it done right then.
So maybe do it at a different time.
Yes, it wouldn't hurt. But for them, that's an annual thing. And then every 6 years, they have to have an internal inspection, which means depressurizing, taking the powder out, a visual inspection of the inside, and then put back together. On a 12-year basis, they have to be taken apart again and then pressurized with water. That's called a hydro test. And so when they do that internal inspection or hydro test, they put a little plastic ring around the neck of the bottle, and so you know when that was done. So that's for commercial use. Most of us at home will have extinguishers that are 20, 30 years old. Had a neighbor this past spring that they were asleep and heard a big pop, woke up, and there was they thought was smoke throughout the house. It turns out they had a 20-year-old fire extinguisher that the mechanism on top, the valve, blew out of the tank. And it was just a manufacturer defect recall from 20 years ago that didn't happen. It was still brand new in the box. They'd never taken it out of the box, never hooked the hose onto it, and yet it blew up and coated everything in their house with powder. So it took a lot of cleaning to make that, to get that taken care of. So it's worth knowing your fire extinguisher, your fire alarm, your CO alarm, all of those things that can help you in case of a fire or help you prevent them. So. Okay.
Well, we will hope that this information will help people be safe this winter and also year-round. I mean, it applies not just at this time of year, other than maybe the Christmas decorations. But, yeah, be safe out there. And if you have questions, you can always contact the fire department. Somebody there will help you out. And they do, as well, do inspections. So if you need some help, they're there.
Yes, give us a call. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Chris Grooms, again, he is the fire marshal here, and do be safe out there this winter.